that day, you know, if I make up in the afternoon, I could hear Barbara lecturing over the top of or underneath the other class. Apparently it's still going on. It's 7:02 seems there must be something in there where the lines look really close or something because it picks it up like they do that.
Or the induction or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But obviously.
But what happens, sometimes is that different tape machines and recording machines, the heads aren't perfectly aligned the same. So sometimes, it'll erase everything but a very, very narrow track or something.
What color test would you like? Orange, green, yellow, blue?
One with no red on it.
We'll use orange. I got technical examples. Okay.
You know what to do here. Just a bunch of paper and
we'll get them all right.
Get them all right. Let's show up.
White and yellow.
Yellow
does good.
Here's green. Yeah.
Use absolute forms in all these nouns, all constructs. In other words, just the ones I asked you for. That's really true in all of them. That's not to say that in the future you may not get me asking some constructs.
Brother, Jamal,
yes,
yesterday,
yes.
Ekmaz,
Pleasant. Nikkeva.
Female.
And Akare.
After
or behind.
After or behind.
Okay, that's the easy part. Now, earth, ground, or soil should be adama. The first. Now, scoring on these 3 points each, 93 points each, 1 point for each letter or vowel point, and a half point for a digation. Stay up to maximum 2-1. That's Kata. Spot out there. Okay, Depp, Malice, you don't need to put the accents. Put the stresses on that syllable. Malice. And the continental is wow there. The thing is Shar. Machine Rage, Helen. Firmament, Rakia. Rakia, that's how about 30 there. Okay, left or so is Cain. Not to be confused with Cain, or the man named Cain. That's Cain meaning left or so. Left or so. Serpent or snake is Nachash. Columns on both. Nachash. Assembly or congregation, Katal. Cursed is Arur. Well, we can put that next to Nakash.
Yeah.
Okay. Then Chariot. Merkava. Name. Role. Reish is Shawad. Kaf. Kalin. And life is Chayim. Chayim. Okay. We have Papak, Yo, the Dagesh, and Yurik Yo. Okay. Go ahead and subtract the points from 50. And you can score out that back to the owner and double check it. A full point for each vowel point. And a half point. So the vowel point counts in the letter. Okay, any questions other than that?
Go ahead and pass them to the
exam here. Next Friday, don't forget we have a harder week.
Yeah.
They seem to keep getting harder as they go because it's such a weight of atmospheric pressure. The more there is above you, the more pressure there is below.
And then the flood just clears you up.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
You know.
Flood through the rain anyway. Okay. Keep them off. All right. We want to finish up exercise 21 here, just a couple of sentences to finish up on this, and then talk about the imperfect. So we had left off here. I don't remember who was up next. Does anybody remember? Somebody got saved by the bell yesterday.
Peter
got saved by the bell.
I thought it was Deb.
Yeah, Shomer Achim Achim Adoki.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I'm supposed to say. Okay. Cain said, I do not know.
Right.
I know that's a participle form of to watch or observe.
To watch or to observe or to keep an interrogative.
My brother. Interrogative.
Right, interrogative.
My brother. And the last word is I, but I don't see how it all fits together.
Okay. Okay, literally it's. Now the question, that hey there is just going to give you intonation in English. So, keeper of my brother am I. It's a predicate construction. Anoki. You probably would normally see it Anoki, Anoki Shomer Aki. In other words, am I my brother's keeper? But the idea is keeper of my brother am I. And there's an emphasis on the keeper here. So they put that first. So. It's just a predicate construction with Anoki and no verb form, and then Shomer is a noun here, a participle, but it's kind of a noun function. I suppose you could call it a participle too in a sense, but without he following it in a construct relationship, you are stuck with the noun idea here. So Shomer is in construct without he, and that whole unit is a predicate construction with Anoki. So. The keeper, and it could be the keeper of my brother or my brother's keeper, even though Shomer doesn't have the article, that hey is an interrogative, it's definitely indefinite. Why? How do I know that Shomer is definite?
Because of the
pronominal suffix. Right, there's a pronominal suffix on Aki, which makes Aki definite, and if Aki is definite, the thing that's in construct to it is definite.
Okay. But then there's no way to put, yeah. Okay. There really is no way the two sentences are equivalent. Am I a keeper of my brother, or am I my brother's keeper? There'd be no way to say them separately.
Keeper of my brother.
Am I a keeper of my brother, or am I my brother's keeper?
Well, it's really the same thing. Oh, I see what you're saying. My brother's. Keeper. Well, the keeper of my brother is the same as my brother's keeper. In other words.
But
in English, we have possessive.
Yeah.
And we write
am I a keeper of my brother?
Oh, I see.
He might have other keepers.
Okay, I catch that, yeah. Am I a keeper of my brother? Yeah.
There's no way to say it differently.
No, we probably wouldn't have any way of saying that. You'd have to break up the wording and use completely different instructions, but I'm not even sure what you would use there. One thing you could use is a cognate. And you could use them. I have one of my brother's keepers. Mm-hmm. That way you can get an indefinite idea. Well, a tag can also be used as an indefinite article. Right?
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It would be laborious to say it that way.
Sure.
For sure. Which means it's quite obvious that this way you say it normally. Notice that Yadati, is that perfect? Well, it's got to be perfect for you, maybe. Yeah. But we're translating it, I don't know, even though it's past tense, and even though it's perfect. And we talked about this with verbs of perception, this type of thing, but it's also translated present. The idea is that I haven't come to the knowledge of that.
Greek does a similar thing.
Perfect right. With oida, it is. Yeah, it's very similar to the perfect form. Yeah, so it's a perfect form that's usually translated in the present idea. Okay. But it's really a parallel idea that it's Hebrew construction. Might even be a Hebrewism, I don't know. But it's just produced more widely than that. Okay, next sentence there, starting with Amar Yahweh. Who's up next? Right again.
Amar Yahweh met Asita.
Met Asita.
Go.
Oh, you can stop there. Oh. That's all you have to do. Yeah, I get warmed up.
Yahweh said, what have you done?
Yes, what have you done? Okay, remember math, the form comes for better also. Okay, Bob, next one. Sorry, Paul.
Paul, the man, Akita, Zoa, King, Eli, and Adamai, Wata, Arur, Ata, in Adama, Asher, Laka Ha, Yes, Dame, Akika, Miyadka.
Okay? Nobody part.
The voice of your brother's blood cries unto me from the ground, and you are cursed from the ground which took the blood of your brother from your hand.
Yes. Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. The voice of the blood of your brother. So here's a construct string there. Kol deme akita. The kol in construct with deme, and that's in construct with akita. And the whole thing is definite because the suffix on akita. So the voice of the blood of your brother is crying out. It's the participle, so probably, it cries out or is crying out unto me from the ground. And here's a little bit of an idiom here. We have a ta repeated here. And so they gave you a footnote on this. Repetition for emphasis. And as for you, you are a curse. It's kind of like, and you are a curse. You know? It's kind of, we all recognize that tone of voice from being children and having been disciplined. Which hopefully we do. Okay, and so, and you, accursed are you from, let's see, accursed are you from the, as for you, you were accursed from the ground which had taken, or which took the blood of your brother from your hand. Question was there, Pete?
Yeah, the construct form of blood, isn't that plural?
Yes, right.
So it's the blood of your brother?
Yeah, they haven't really said that, stated that, have they? They gave Dom the singular, but more often than not, you'll find that Dom means. They do tell you what the plural is, but they don't really tell you how it's used. I thought there was a statement further back, but maybe there wasn't. Maybe it might be confusing with some other books, but Dom mean is often used in the plural. The idea of blood is often used in the plural, and we would translate it singular. It can be blood, too, but it's kind of a, you're talking about bloodlines or something like that, a number of bloodlines. Blood, but most often it's
well, if it was in the shedding of blood, it's not just cut of blood.
It's blood all over, kind of a plural, they call it a plural of extent. There might be some debate about exactly what kind of plural it is, but it's one of those words that's listed in Gesenius, the inspection with plural majesty and a lot of others, Damim and life also being plural. It's got a singular sense, so it's very simple. But I'm surprised you didn't make a note of that, because otherwise you'd think, the blood's of your brother. That's what it could literally be. But it's, we just can't
see that. You're talking about the individual molecules.
Yeah, those are the individual blood corpuscles. White corpuscles and red corpuscles are red. Okay. I'm glad you noted that, though. I would have skipped over that. Any other questions on that? Okay, John, you can finish it off here.
Amar Kayin El Yahweh. Awoni.
Right. That's good.
Gadol Memeni.
Okay. Awoni Gadol.
Awoni.
Awoni.
It fits for what he's
saying. Yeah.
Cain spoke toward Yahweh. My guilt is great from me, or is too great
for me. Right. It's too great for me. Right. It's really great for me. Yes, King said to Yahweh, my guilt is too big for me. Okay, we haven't had our one yet. He's a hound. But you know, you recognize the third yellow subject from My Guilt. Okay, questions on any of that?
What's interesting is that My Guilt Is Too Great For Me didn't come when he saw his brother slain.
Yes,
it only came when he
came
got
caught. Tells you something about
that. Yeah, the mean guilt, and since guilt trespass, could it be referring to my guilt that brings judgment, in other words,
the judgment,
the judgment of the guilt,
something like that. My having been found guilty.
Yeah.
It's probably got that connotation. I think that's the only way you can tell that is do a word study on it.
That word's got out of my way.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
right.
I'll always be.
There are definitely words in Hebrew that are out of my way. Very definitely. And, we'll get to some later on that are really that way, right? There's Gilgal, for example, all the way. Lesson 22, The Imperfect, which you've all been waiting for. Here's a new paradigm. This one you have to memorize. Okay, we come now to the second main inflection of the Hebrew verb, the imperfect. The imperfect in context of serving is primarily a pretextual conjugation, which means that primarily you're putting something on the front rather than something on the back, although you get a few suffixes on them too. So some have both prefixes and suffixes. All of them have prefixes, without exception. And one, two, three, four, five of the forms out of nine, out of ten, I guess. About half of them have suffixes also. So let's go through and take a look at this. And this is something I would recommend that you write down the paradigm and be saying to yourself day and night, going through this. And I can still remember the time going through these paradigms. And say them out loud too if you can. You can lock yourself in a room someplace, nobody can hear you and wonder what you're doing. Of course, some from the chapel are just going to be speaking to us. But for kathav, our standard verb, we have the he will write third. Now, again, we're starting third person to first person, so the verb paradigms are always going third to first. And one thing you will have to watch, though, is that there's one more form in this paradigm than there is in the other paradigm we have. And that's because in the plurals there are two different forms, masculine and feminine, where the third person plural and the perfect just cop and boo, and it didn't have a separate form for the feminine. There's a separate form in the imperfect for the feminine. So that's something to watch. Okay, well, let's go through it. Singular, yiktov. Notice your pattern is you put a prefix on, in this case, yod. You have used a hirik and then put a schwa on the first letter of the root, which makes a closed syllable. And then we have a kolon as the thematic vowel in the second syllable. So from kathav, we have yiktov. And in this particular verb, we start out kathav with a soft vowel. Now we get a hard vowel. Does anybody see a reason for that? I mean, the reason is based on something you already know, not just something new here. Beginning of the syllable, right. In other words, because we took the first letter and made it the closing of a previous syllable, now the tau is beginning of syllable. Because of that, the god kafat, beginning of syllable, is going to get the dagesh. So it's really not, and the reason I say that is it's not something due to the fact that it's an imperfect, and imperfect gets the dagesh in that second, in that middle radical. It only happens with the god kafat because of the fact that the first syllable flows. So if this were some other letter here that chosen a different verb, it would not get a dagesh there. Only the god kafats do it. Now, later on, we'll get to PL forms in which we will have a dagesh as a part of the conjugation, you might say. Regardless of what letter it is. But in this case, it's only because of the fact that it's the syllable now. Okay, so yiktov, and then the she will write is kiktov, just the same thing, we should put a tau on the front instead of the yod. And the you masculine figure will write is kiktov also, so that's pretty easy. Exactly the same form, but guess what? That means that if you see the form tic-toe, it could be ambiguous. It could mean you will write masculine singular, or she will write feminine, third person feminine singular. So usually context is quite sufficient to tell there, though. I mean, that's quite a difference. Okay, tic-toe is you feminine singular will write. And ex-toe is I shall write. Now you've got aleph with segol as your prefix. Other than that, the form's pretty much the same. Then plurals, yiktavu, they will write masculine plural. And tiktovna, they will write feminine plural. Tiktavu, you will write masculine plural. And tiktovna, you will write feminine plural. Anything you notice about tiktovna?
Yeah.
The same for one. In other words, feminine plural, the same for third person and second person. The form's exactly the same. They have to decide from context. You will write or they will write feminine. They probably get by with it because it's so rare that you see a feminine plural used anyway. That it's probably not that big of a problem. And then the last form, we shall write, there's only one form that's common, nikto. So in the first person, singular and plural is still common. In other words, there's only one form for first person. But in the third person and second person, both in the singulars and plurals, in the imperfect, there's a different form. Okay, so all I can say is practice this paradigm, you know. Yikto, tikto, 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 you know, tiktavu, tikto, and that stuff. You'll get used to it. You'll know that sound very well. But I also caution you that if you're learning the paradigm, don't just get so you can say run through those things fast and not know what they mean. You know what I mean? You got to get it linked to a meaning. Otherwise, it can happen to you that you know the paradigm very well, but you don't know what any of them are. You know, or you can get it reversed and say, no, you start with first, go to third or something, and you can get really confused. So try to associate each of those forms. In fact, if you're going through the paradigm, Pethav, you might just say, Yikto, he will write, Tikto, she will write, something like that. In other words, to get a connection in your mind between the form and the meaning of the form.
Do all the second letters have Shua?
Second letters, yeah, right. It's always a closed syllable to start with all the forms.
And all, every single possible imperfect, I guess.
Well, of course you would have that.
Wait, if you one hand,
check it. Yeah, see, when you get to one olive, and you get to one yolas, and you get to, there are more complications in the imperfect because of that, precisely that. Yeah, so let's just put it this way. For a triconsonantal regular verb, that will be a shua in second syllable. But later on, when you get the guttural and so forth, you're going to get half the five times, you're going to get changes from the first vowel point to the other way, you're going to get, you know, bizarre things happening. Okay. So what I'm trying to say is that the imperfect has more complications than the perfect has because of this prefix problem. Okay. Now, a few notes here. Note that the reduction of a stem vowel from colon to schwa is regular before a suffix vocal element consisting of a vowel. Well, what he's saying is this. Your second vowel here on the stem, tikto, yikto, tikto, tikto, now tik to be, notice the colon on the tau there has reduced to schwa. And then you have ecto, and then you have yiktavu. There the colon has reduced to shua also. And tiktovna, you still got the colon. But then tiktavu is reduced to shua. Tiknotov has got the colon again in nikto. So what he's saying is that the forms that have a purely vocalic suffix, like hirikyo or shurek, the only two involved here, those are the ones that get shua, where the colon goes to shua. All the rest of the forms have the colon, you know, full flesh colon in all those forms. So it's tiktavi, it's yiktavu, and tiktavu that have a shua under the tau there, that where the colon was. All the rest of the forms have colon. That's just kind of a device for remembering where the second one reduces to shua also. Okay, then in the plural, there is a formal difference in the third person plural, contrast the perfect between the two genders. Now, in the perfect, there was only one common form, in the imperfect, there's two forms. And then the feminine plural, the third and second persons are formally the same. That tick-tolkna form is the same. Okay, there's a footnote down here, too, I should draw your attention to, because you will have to be aware of it in the text. On the asterisk is connected up there to the third-person masculine singular, third-person masculine plural form, excuse me, yiktivu. It says a not uncommon variant has the ending un, and so you're just adding a nu to it, a nun to it, excuse me, with or without the reduction of the vowel of the stem vowel. So sometimes the stem vowel will be reduced, other times not. So that's old, in other words. So you might see yiktivun, or you might see yiktovun with the full colon there. Thank you. Okay. I don't know. Terrible. Otherwise, you would maybe
move all the way from the Greek to the
Greek. You
walk
the other way around, probably. Okay. Probably go that way, I suppose. But it's only in this imperfect form, and you will see that quite frequently. Certainly frequently enough to have to take note of it. Okay, then. We shall see in the study that in the study of the imperfect, it is necessary to make more subdivisions among the root types than was necessary with the perfect. And that's again because of prefixes being stuck onto it and what happens to the prefix when stuck onto a certain type of a letter. So verbs with nun, aleph, or yod in the first root position have forms which diverge considerably from those just given for the sound trilittal verb. And again, the problem is because suppose the thing begins with a nun, what's going to happen there is the nun will assimilate into the tau form. You know, that you have a prefix tau, and tau is like to swallow up nun for some reason. Okay, that's the way I would put it. You know, we've already run into a few things in the end and so forth, but that happens here too. And with the aleph, of course, you have a guttural, so you have a problem with the schwa, the thing that Bryce was mentioning. Then with yod, you also have a problem because it can also be a modern and so forth, and it's looking like a modern, and you have to, you know, decide what you're going to do with that, what vowel points to take, so forth. So those complications will come in due time, sufficient for the day to be aware of. Okay. Verbs introduced thus far in the vocabulary and inflected exactly like katav are the following. So he's just going to narrow things down to the real clear sound, trilateral consonant verbs that we've had so far. And so here we'll see the imperfect. He's giving you the third person masculine singular form of the imperfect in each of these. Of all the verbs we've learned, these are the only ones that are nice in the imperfect so far. See, the other ones had a guttural in the first position, or they had a guttural in the last position, or a guttural in the middle or something. Some of those aren't too bad. You know, we're going to get to, in the next chapter, some three you know, ions and so forth. They're not too bad, but some of them get pretty bad later on. Okay, so zakar becomes yizkor. And again, you get the same pattern of a prefix, shawa on the first letter, and on the colon. Karas becomes yikrov. Shabar becomes yishbor. And again, because it's begad kifad in second position, it gets the heart, it gets the dagesh. Shamar becomes yishmor. That doesn't get the dagesh. Lakav becomes yokod. Lakav becomes yokod. Kavat becomes yikvot. And Shabbat becomes Yishbot, and Katav, as we've had, becomes Yishbot. Okay? So that's the pattern, and then the rest of the paradigm follows suit. In other words, if you know Katav, you can make a paradigm for all of these verbs. It's a matter of substituting the three letters. Okay? Now, the meaning of the imperfect. What does it all mean? We've got three categories of meaning for the imperfect here, and this doesn't even include the consecutive series that we'll get later on. But first of all, the future. You want to say something in the future? The idea of the imperfect basically is incomplete action, but the details are given here. We have, he kind of takes some exception to the idea of incomplete action, but when we go through this. First of all, the future, he will write. So if you want to say something in the future, you'll use the imperfect for it. It doesn't mean the imperfect always means future, though. It just means that that's what's used for the future. It may also mean something else, like no section B. Habitual or customary action. So if it's an action that's a customary or habitual thing, a continual action like that, you'll use the imperfect, even if the action may be taking place in the past. So it could be he writes as a matter of custom, or he used to write as a matter of custom, or he will write as a matter of custom. So it could be past, present, or future of habitual action. This is the reason why when Yahweh says I am and uses the imperfect form, it's not a simple matter of saying he will be, because there's too many contexts of what has to decide this. And most scholars feel, and I think rightly so, that it's intended to be indefinite and use the imperfect form to conclude habitual action, the past, present, and future. Because he always was, he is, and he will be. See? Okay. Then the modal, this is a little bit more complicated, and you can't really handle this very well yet because we don't have the kind of context necessary for it. But let me just read it for now, and then we'll get the details later. The modal is the imperfect, must frequently be translated in one of several modally modified ways. Using the English equivalent, may, might, would, could, can, or should. Now this would be more equivalent to, like in the Greek, the subjunctive or optative moods. And in Hebrew, you don't have subjunctive or optative forms to work with, but you will use the imperfect in situations like that, and context, and then rely on context. And it's not always as nebulous as it might seem. There are certain phrase constructions that make it quite obvious that you're dealing with this type of a situation. So precise directions for this translation are virtually impossible to give because it's conditioned by the entire syntactic structure. So you can't just say, here's the rule for it. It has to do with the whole structure. And later on, we will be talking about it, and you will be able to see how these things are used, but it requires the discussion of conditional clauses and the final clause and that type of thing. So it's conditioned by the entire syntactic structure in which the verb is embedded. Okay, then the most important of these syntactic patterns will be considered in later lessons. In an isolated sentence, the future or habitual translation is more appropriate. So for your exercises where you're dealing with an isolated sentence and you don't have enough context to decide, just use a future or an habitual sense, whichever you prefer there. With the exception of the future usage, where the action described may be quite specific, the imperfect is otherwise used to describe action, and that, I think you've got a typo there, used to describe, not describe. Okay, describe action conceived by the speaker as general, non-specific, habitual, potential, or to some degree probable. It is not entirely accurate, however, to describe such action as incomplete or unfinished, as is often done. It's not quite as simple as that, is what he's saying. He's not saying it's totally wrong, it's just that the form got the name imperfect, meaning incomplete action. And that's a pretty good approximation, but it's because of these modal senses in which it's used and so forth, it's really a broader idea than that. It's a general, non-specific, habitual, potential, or some degree probable action. Okay. So it's kind of an interesting idea. It's something that kind of comes from experience with it, working with it. You can see here that the tense idea is not nearly as precise in Hebrew as it is in Greek or in English. And Greek has some differences from English too, like aorist versus imperfect, difference in aspect. But Hebrew is almost totally in the realm of aspect. It's not really zeroing in on time using the verb form alone to do that. Especially after we get into well consecutive series, where you'll see perfects used for future, and you'll see in present, and you'll see imperfects used for past. And there's a converted sense to them. But it has to do with the mechanisms of the construction, the context. And so they're dealing with, to get to the idea of time, Hebrew is relying more upon more than just the form of the verb. It's relying upon other keys in the context and so forth. Okay, but we'll have to embellish that and refine that as we go. Now, the imperfect is negated with lull. So if you want to negate an imperfect form, in other words, say he will not write, for example, that would be lull, if so. So the same as with the perfect also use lull for the negative. Now, there will be some other forms of the verb later on, the imperative, that will use a different form of the negative, so that's the reason to put an emphasis here. So lo yikto was he will not write or does not write or was not accustomed to write or wouldn't write. Any possibility there is as far as the imperfect is concerned. In poetry, the negative all is also found, all yikto. So you may see all instead of lo as a negation in poetry. And all you'll also see later on for imperative, things like that, as a negative. So. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We will, there's no assignment for Tuesday. We'll be talking about this more. Take a break there. And Tuesday, early part of the week, we'll finish up this chapter, and then we'll do a review for chapter 17 and 20, grammar tests on Friday. Okay.
I don't know, because